worked. What a miracle. Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome on behalf of Jeffrey Byrne and Associates. And the first thing I'm going to do is have everybody introduce themselves. And because it is being podcast, we'll just ask for your name and the organization you represent. No commercials, please. So Terry's going to work around this way, and I'll go from here.
Jeffrey Byrne. Oh, with Jeffrey Byrne and Associates.
Good morning. Lori Larson with the Community Foundation.
Good morning. Jennifer Furla, Jeffrey Byrne and Associates.
Good morning. Sarah Ingramizer with the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater.
Claudia Baker with the Kansas City Public Library.
Catherine Carter with the American Jazz Museum.
Kate Beebe with the Friends of Chamber Music.
Jeanette Blackbar, Lead Center of Kansas.
Angie Fiedler-Sutton, primarily with Casey Stage Magazine.
Megan Poindexter, Lead Center of Kansas.
Mary Ellen Clark with Jeffrey Byrne and Associates.
Kimberly Allen, Linda Hall Library.
Maria Tapia Balsito with the Theater in the Park of Johnson County Park and Rec.
Leah Curry with the Kemper Museum of Contemporary Art.
Trudy Galblum, Nonprofit Connect.
Yvonne Jameson, Unicorn Theater.
Daniel Anderson, Privilege Municipal Foundation and Privilege Arts Council.
Ingrid Stölzel with New Era Contemporary Music Ensemble.
Sarah Van Landite with the Arts Council of Johnson County.
Harlan Brownlee, Arts Council of Metropolitan Kansas City.
Kelly Ellison, Arts Council of Metropolitan Kansas City.
Jennifer Wampler, Kansas City Ballet.
Okay. Good group. Everybody remember everybody's name now, right? Got it? All right. Just want to share a couple of things with you. One of them is this new fundraising strategy that I've been familiar with from some other work I've done. It's related to a cell phone. And here's how it plays out. If your cell phone goes off during this presentation, you will be asked and to write a check to your favorite charity for $100. And I'm sure it's going to be your own organization, but I will accept $100 graciously if you want to give it to me. But otherwise, turn it off now. And you probably think this is just really a stupid idea. However, one meeting, I raised $600. Another meeting, I raised $400. And now some of the people I worked with in that particular organization now say, just everybody leave your cell phone on. We need a little cash flow here today. So if you'll do that for us, that would be great. And I want to share one other story. This summer I was in Colorado quite a bit of the time where I love to be. I mean, it's a real connection with God for me and being in that environment and on top of a mountain. And I always like it when people ask me, do you still ski? Like, you know, obviously a woman your age doesn't ski, but I let them know, yes, I still ski a lot more cautiously than I used to, but I still ski. And I was... I have a friend who runs the Salvation Army there, and they were experiencing some major challenges, even in that very wealthy valley, of people losing their homes, not having enough food, and their pantry went to was just wiped out. And they decided, a group of volunteers decided they were really going to get together and do something about this. And what they had was called the Empty Soup Bowl Lunch. And they got restaurants in the valley to donate soup. They had artists make soup bowls, and you picked up your soup bowl, and you put your soup in it, obviously. Yeah. And then you kept the soup bowl to take home to remind you of the people who didn't have food. And so mine sits on my desk, and it's a great reminder. This was done strictly by a group of volunteers. The staff did not have to engage in it. They, in 2 months' time and in a three-hour period of passing out soup to the people in the community, which they ran out of, by the way, they raised $9,000. And it, to me, one, it was a great community builder. Secondly, it was a great way to use volunteers. And Lori, in these sessions, has talked to us about the importance of volunteers in your organization and really taking care of them. And I know I'm singing to the choir on this one. Then Jennifer told me after I was sharing this story that the kids at Shawnee Mission East do the same thing. And I was equally fascinated by that because I think what these young people are doing today is phenomenal in terms of their volunteering and the events that they participate in. And I love it. I wish that had been more of a life experience for me when I was growing up. So we're in just a minute we have Jennifer is going to speak to you. But I, again, want to thank you for being here. You have met the staff, and you'll see us again. And at any time you have any questions, please feel free to ask them. As Michelle said, we would like to get a microphone to you, if possible, so the questions can be heard on the podcast. And after the session, if you want to stay and ask any questions, please do so. So enjoy your day. Oh, I forgot to ask. Why did you come today? Well, you can't say my mom made me or, you know. A brave person. Thank you.
You know, as we're all in the trenches, I think we also want to know what's happening on a higher level in terms of trends, giving specifically to the arts. That's why I'm here.
Great. Other, why are you here?
I think the session in July was really interesting about giving in Kansas City, and I think it's nice to sort of look at that on a very big level, but also in terms of just the arts and to connect with colleagues in the arts. So that's why I'm here.
Anyone else want to share? Got to get somebody in this end of the room has to.
It's to simply learn some more. Yeah.
All right, thanks. That wasn't too hard at all, was it? All right, Jennifer.
Good morning. Barbara was able to wander, and I'm not because I'm going to be tied to the PowerPoint here a little bit. But I think you hit it right on in talking about the relationship of our program in July to now. And that really is what motivated our firm, the Community Foundation, and 11 other major foundations here in town to invest in Giving Kansas City. And then further for us to do these sector sessions. The questions were, okay, well, we understand now what giving looks like nationally. But what about Kansas City? And so we answered that with giving in Kansas City. But then what about giving to arts, culture, and humanities in Kansas City? And I'm going to review some of that information that is within the body of the report, which is available on all three of our websites, Nonprofit Connect and Jeffrey Byrne and Associates and the Community Foundation. And then once Lori is going to give you a look at what the sector looks like in terms of several different slices, what your contributions are to Kansas City and the economy and the nonprofit sector. And then Jeffrey's going to close today with some of your responses from the surveys that you filled out, and I want to thank you for doing that, as well as engaging in some discussions of what do we do now. How many of you were in the big room here at Kauffman in July? How many? Okay, good, good. All right. Oops, I'm going the wrong way. Here we go. All right, well, if you were here, you remember that the big number is $307 billion. Not a surprise, the same lesson that's been around for as many years as I've been involved with the Giving USA Foundation, and that is that really individuals are where it's at when it comes to charitable giving overall. And listening to or reading your survey responses, I think that this group clearly understands the importance of cultivating those relationships. However, the art sector looks a little bit different here in Kansas City when it comes to what you're, as the Giving USA Foundation says, sources and uses of the pie. So a couple of notes on this. If you don't recall this from July, individuals living made up 75% of that total. When you add bequests, you're up to 82%. But here's the note that you want to make. When you add foundations that are controlled by individuals, the number goes up to 88% controlled by individuals in terms of giving. So of that foundation percentage, a good number of those are controlled by individuals, and then institutional foundations and corporations together make up about 12% of giving. The other data that you might remember is that for 2008, giving was down nationally about 2%, 5.7% adjusted for inflation. Now, if you had come to Giving USA the year prior, you might have remembered that giving in 07 was $307 billion. The way this works is that when we make the reports in July, it is done via an estimate, a very solid estimate of giving. But the interesting note is that by the end of 2007, prior to the economic dynamics that we're experiencing now, giving in the United States had actually gone up to $314 billion. That number really didn't get widely reported, and of course is the largest amount given in the history of charitable giving in the United States. What does this look like nationally in terms of where that money goes? Arts gets about 4%, arts, culture, and humanities, gets about 4% of the pie, or about $12 billion. Now, what is that sector, what is your sector defined as? In the report, arts is defined as performing arts, museums of all types, including science and children's museums, and organizations focused on preserving ethnic, cultural, or linguistic heritage. And Claudia, I'm glad you are here, and they don't specifically mention libraries, but that's got to be where the libraries are located. Couple of notes here. Religion made 35% of the pie. That is the first time that giving to religion has increased in quite a while. Back when Jeffrey and I started in fundraising, it probably made up about 50% of the pie and had gotten down to about 33% in the early 2000s. Now, the lesson here is that giving to religion never decreased. It's just that the total pie has grown larger and larger over time. We've been doing this report since 1954, for 56 years, and there have been new sectors that have come up. Tomorrow we do a session on environment and animals and international giving. Those are all relatively new sectors. Gifts to foundations have increased dramatically with the run-up of the stock market over the years. And this year, specifically, grants to individuals is a new category of giving that you will see some growth in over future years. So let's move on to Kansas City and see what those numbers look like. Here is the distribution of giving in Kansas City compared with the United States. You can see that household giving is down a little compared to household giving nationally, and that foundations and corporations here in Kansas City make up a larger share of the pie. That's good news for arts organizations because your numbers are much more heavily skewed toward foundation giving. Total giving in Kansas City, $2.15 billion. That's not written on your slide, so you might want to make a note of that. And that represents generally the same percentage of all giving as Kansas City represents or is represented as a percentage of the total U.S. population. So how do arts fare, arts, culture, and humanities fare compared to other sectors? You can see that religious giving in Kansas City was much higher than the national average, as was human services and public society benefit. A bit of good news for you is that arts, culture, and humanities giving also outpaced the national average, 6% here versus 5% nationally. That number is $120 million. That is your share of the pie. 69% of that stayed in Kansas City. Now, as it's divided up for arts, culture, and humanities according to the sources of giving, let's take a look at this chart, and I'll try to explain to you how this works. First, look at environment and animals. That's a good benchmark for you to see how the chart overall is set out. You can see that giving to environment and animals, is roughly equally distributed among four different sources: households, foundations, bequests, and corporate giving. Corporate giving being the lightest bar to the far right. When you look down at your sector, arts, culture, and humanities, you will notice that there is no bequest giving in the year measured, and that 54% of the giving to your sector comes from foundations. Don't be concerned about the no bequest giving. That is a function of the snapshot of the year in which this data was measured. Bequest giving nationally is driven by about 300 very large foundations, and same goes here in Kansas City. It's a function of who died during the year that the data was collected, who had a charitable intent, who also indicated arts, culture, and humanities as part of their estate plans. So it could look very different from year to year, and it's certainly, you can certainly use it as an opportunity to talk about the need for plan giving, but it certainly isn't a reflection of lack of plan giving efforts on the part of your sector. Foundation giving generally represented, Now, household giving is about 2%. That outpaces, again, household giving to the arts nationally at about 1.6% and represents $36 million coming from households or individuals to arts, culture, and humanities. Now, what you've got to remember when you look at this slide, to me this would be a bit depressing if I were sitting in your chair, but when you look at this slide, you look at giving to religion, of course, very heavily driven by individuals, by household giving. And then you look at what is being given to basic needs, public society benefit and basic needs. Those slides together, those pieces of the pie, represent 80% of all giving. So arts is, you're making your way in about a 20% slice of the pie. It certainly is something to think about when you're looking at who your individual donors are, and the next slides will illustrate that for you. One of the big ahas in the giving in Kansas City report was the vast difference in giving at the higher income levels of donors in Kansas City compared to donors nationally. You can see it here. Donors nationally at $4,200 per year as an average annual household gift, and donors in Kansas City in that higher income bracket at $7,600. So how that looks for the arts is that arts ranks about sixth or seventh in terms of giving priorities for individuals across all income levels. However, when you're looking at that highest income level, which is where the good news is, you receive 25% of those donations. You look at the next slide and overlay that with the propensity to give according to education level. So follow with me here. High income donors, college educated, 25% of the higher income donors giving to the arts, and that clearly gives you some indication about where you should be focusing your efforts in terms of targeting acquisition and donor prospects. Foundation giving, which again, if you'll remember, makes up 54% of all giving to the arts sector, has some good news. Foundation giving in Kansas City of that $2.1 billion represents nearly $400 million of the pie. The actual number is $393 million. 61% of that, or $240 million, stays in Kansas City, and 75% of that is driven by the top 10 foundations. 50% of all foundation giving is driven by two foundations, at least in the year studied, Greater Kansas City Community Foundation and Hall Family Foundation. Arts, culture, and humanities giving got $71 million, or about 18% of the pie, and that is much higher than the national average. Nationally, all foundations total are giving about 12% to arts, culture, and humanities, and you're giving not quite double that, or you're receiving not quite double of that. Now, the slide that you have up here illustrates where you rank compared to the other sectors, as well as where you rank compared to foundation giving nationally. Melissa Brown, when she came and spoke to the Funders Forum here in September, when she webcasted in and spoke to the Funders Forum in September, told us that of all foundation giving nationally to all types of sectors, the average foundation grant is $30,000. So you can see here that arts, culture, and humanities is not only second in terms of foundation giving priorities and outpaces the national average, but is one of only four sectors in Kansas City that actually did better than the national average. Some of you are saying on your surveys that you were focusing more on submitting grants, and that suggests to me that you are right-minded in how you are focusing those efforts. The other piece to this, though, is when you look at the median grant, and you'll remember Patrick Rooney pointing out to you that median is midpoint, and if that's only $2,000, that means for all arts, culture, and humanities organizations across the board in Kansas City, half the grants going to those organizations are greater than $2,000, but half the grants going to arts, culture, and humanities are less than $2,000. I am assuming those may be small arts-related program grants for schools and other educational programs that would be related to arts, culture, and humanities. One other thing that you might tune into when you actually look at the report tracked 52 grants of $1 million or greater given in Kansas City. And arts, culture, and humanities received 13 of those, very much the lion's share, and received 5 of the top 10 grants. Okay, so we had the Nelson campaign going. We had the Performing Arts Center campaign going. We had a very large grant going to Science City, and that also relates to who some of the top foundation givers are. But it does suggest that there is a very high correlation between large foundation grant making and this particular sector. Looking at corporate giving in Kansas City made up $150 million. Remember that corporate giving in Kansas City outpaced the national average, and 87% of that stays in Kansas City. That's really high. Very clearly, and to me that was good news, that corporations here, even as they are moving some of their presences outside of Kansas City, very much care about keeping their corporate dollars here. Corporate giving is also double the national average, 9% in Kansas City versus 5% nationally. That includes corporate foundations. Corporate foundations made up $19 million of that total, $150 million. And $13 million of that stayed in Kansas City. To the arts, the average corporate grant, not listed here, but the average corporate grant is $4,500. And the median or midpoint corporate foundation grant is $500. Okay? All of this information is listed and is detailed within the body of the report. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I am going to a little bit. Raise your hands if you've actually gone and downloaded the report. Okay. How many of you have had the opportunity to have a discussion with your board members about giving in Kansas City and giving USA? Again, raise your hands. Okay. If you haven't, our hope is that you will take these slides and this data along with what Lori has to share and more specifically strategies that Jeffrey will be sharing and engage in that conversation, because we know that for Arts Giving, while some of that is good news, that Kansas City has outpaced the giving levels nationally, it's not a great picture for Arts Giving nationally or in Kansas City right now. And you all are doing very much some of the right things. Let's take a look. I'm going to invite Lori up to come up and take a look at how the sector relates to Kansas City overall. And we're happy to take questions as we get into the discussion later. Thanks.
Good morning. We are going to shift gears just a little bit, as Jennifer mentioned, and we're going to look a little bit more at the economic impact of the arts, culture, and humanities sector, as well as talk about some of the social aspects of this sector as well. What Giving in Kansas City studies is charitable giving, and that is looking at contributions from individuals, foundations, corporations, and bequests. When we talk about economic impact, we're going to add two more revenue sources, and that is government grants and earned revenue. So the dynamics are going to change just a little bit. The slide that you see right now is the big picture of the Kansas City metropolitan area as far as the nonprofit sector. The nonprofit sector in Kansas City is very important to sustaining the quality of life. It generates 9% of the gross metropolitan product, so it's very important in our economy. From giving in Kansas City, Jennifer mentioned that the arts sector gets about 6% of charitable giving. It is the fifth most popular sector in individual and charitable giving as far as Kansas City goes. We see that same trend pretty much consistently when we roll all of the revenue sources in. It is still the sixth strongest sector in Kansas City as far as revenue. It gets 3% of the total revenue. But we also have a very unique situation with arts in Kansas City because of this, of some of the larger organizations, especially the Kaufman Performing Arts Center. So take that into account a little bit, too. The slide that you see here, the lighter blue bars are the total percent of the organizations in the sector, and the darker blue bars are the total percent of the revenue that each sector generates. And I've highlighted the arts in the purple. This slide drills down just a little bit more into the specific sectors of arts, culture, and humanity. If any of you are interested in finding out which organizations fall into these categories, just send me an email or give me a call at the Community Foundation. I'll be happy to provide that information. But you can see that three of these sectors dominate revenue. They generate almost 50% of all the arts and culture, and they consist of about 25% of the organizations. So it's also very important when we think that we all know that our financial sustainability is critical. If there's no margin, there's no mission. But there's the opposite, the same side of the coin is the social outcomes and the social impact. So when you look at these different sectors, you'll see that some generate a very high percentage of revenue but contain a small amount of organizations, and then you will see the flip side. So it's very important looking at this slide and thinking about how your sector is positioned and specifically about how your organization is positioned. Where are you as far as being able to develop really good stories, anecdotes, and equipping your staff, your board, and your volunteers in how you're really achieving your mission through your programs? And this is about telling the story of your social outcomes beyond just financial ratios and sustainability. It really falls into the category of donor education. And this is very much needs to be supported in all of our organizations, not just by our director of fundraising or all fall on the shoulders of the CEO. Our boards are so important in being our messengers and our ambassadors in spreading the news and telling the stories about how your organization does its work. Your volunteers as well, your employees. It really is a completely, very much a team effort. And also your donors. You know, have you, if you can create some really good stories that are very visual Very consistent and very succinct about outcomes and differences that you've made in the clients that you serve. This slide takes a look at the diversity of the revenue sizes that we have in the arts sector. If we bundle some of these together a little bit more, we're going to see that almost three-quarters of the arts organizations are operating with budget sizes of less than $250,000 a year. And this is really significant because it shows us how important smaller organizations are to the overall impact of sustaining the arts sector. And again, this is helping to tell the story around your outcomes of your programs. And when we talk about smaller organizations, the issue of volunteers also comes up. The volunteers that we have in our sector are very important. They help achieve the work of the organization. Two things that we know that are helpful to volunteers is to affirm the work that they do, recognize them, and make sure that they have the training that they need. Some of the arts organizations deal with some very difficult subject areas, dealing with crisis management and that type of thing. So maybe be sure and equip your volunteers with new ways to help support the clients that they serve so that they feel very confident and competent. Another thing that we know about volunteers, people who are engaged in your organization are much more likely to give financially. Now, some of those volunteers may not have the financial capacity to give, but sometimes if you can create, I mentioned this before, a visualization. If a volunteer has $5 to give and they can leverage that with 9 other volunteers who have another $5 to give, what difference is that going to make in your organization to the clients that they serve? Would it provide services, for 2 weeks for an additional client, an additional child? What would it look like? Would it be music tutoring for 2 weeks? So any type of visualization really helps people understand that they can make a difference. And we do know that people are motivated to donate when they know that they can help achieve change and when they feel a connection with the organization. And if they're volunteering for your organization, they definitely feel a connection. This is a slide that shows how many of the organizations are meeting their expenses. Are they breaking even? And we see that about three-quarters of the organizations are breaking even. We've got about 10% that are a little bit borderline, and the rest are not being able to meet expenses with existing revenue. So this really brings up the question of endowments. Do you have one? Are you thinking about one? If you do have one, what's the capacity for the endowment? What type of restrictions do you have as far as usage? And also, the board plays a big part in this, using their expertise in order to help you move on this as well. The other thing we have is how are temporary and permanently restricted assets playing into your being able to meet your expenses for long-term sustainability? And also, are you drawing on surplus previous cash reserves? So lots of questions going on here. One of the big questions that we face is looking at this slide, and all of the sectors look very similar when we talk about this sector right, or when we talk about this slide right now, is how can we meet the increasing demand that we have in sustaining quality of life and serving, achieving our programs, and continuing to either minimize expenses or at least be able to sustain where we are. One of the things that is really changing in the landscape of our culture is for-profit businesses partnering with nonprofits. This is pretty much a trifecta all the way around. There's a lot of research out right now that is showing that for-profits are looking for ways to brand and strengthen their marketing and communication and awareness in their community. Social responsibility is a big deal. Professionals are looking for places that not only provide basic health and retirement benefits, but also how do they give back to the community? So social responsibility is really becoming part of employee benefits. We also know that employees who are linking up with employers who are very active in their community builds employee commitment. There is low morale in some of the organizations, the for-profits. The economy, as we know, is a lot unstable right now. And so helping to build employee morale, employee loyalty, it's a great team-building aspect when they get involved with your organization. And this doesn't necessarily have to be the large corporations. These can be some of the small proprietorships in your communities. So it's just a great way. And when you bring those people in to help, you know, do volunteer work, then you can start help working toward moving them toward the pipeline of being volunteers, becoming involved in your organization, and hopefully eventually bringing them into your own family of giving within your organization. The other thing I want to mention on this slide is the wisdom of what I like to call the wisdom of the crowds. And this is not the dreaded M word of merger, but there are a lot of options. When we look to helping to sustain our programs and the work that we do and trying to minimize or at least restrain our expenses, learning from our colleagues, even on a casual basis like we are today, going to the Nonprofit Connect learning circles, all sorts of different options. I mentioned the partnering with for-profits. What about program sharing between other organizations that do similar work that you do? What about partnering with for-profits and helping you with some of the administrative work or sharing office resources, all the types of options that are out there? It's another way to be very innovative. This is a great story when you do take on some of these and it's successful to share with your funders. They love innovative new ways to try to help sustain your organization. One more thing before I leave this slide, and that's matched giving. This is also something that we know helps create additional giving. If someone knows that their dollar is going to be is going to go further because their dollar is going to be matched, people are more motivated and have a higher probability of giving. It doesn't matter whether it's 10 cents on the dollar or 50 cents on the dollar, but matched giving really generates success. So it's another good thing that we can look into as well. This is the workforce in the nonprofit sector. It really demonstrates the human resource investment that we have in Kansas City for the arts, entertainment, and recreation sector. There's a little bit of nonprofit and for-profit mix in here as well. One of the things that we're finding really popular at the Community Foundation that I would encourage you to explore too is giving circles. This is a really casual, relaxed way to connect people who either care about your organization or maybe several of you get together and you have people who care about the arts or the humanities or cultural type organizations. It's a great way to get people involved. It's very comfortable. And it's been very successful at the Community Foundation. It's really been successful nationwide. It's just a different dynamic. So it's been successful that way. And the other thing is talking to your board members about asking them if they would generate or create a giving circle as well. Again, the importance of strong leadership on our board is extremely important during this time. This slide, I want you to X out the one that you have attached in your booklet. This one was wrong. The JB&A Associates are completely on top of their game, and we found an error, and the book was already bound. So you have the correct slide in the back of your book. This is a slide that shows the primary revenue sources by the size of the organization, and we measured the size of the organization by full-time employee equivalents. Sometimes we run into pass-through funds and that type of thing, and it kind of skews things away. This is actually one of the things that shows a great diversity. What we're looking at here is special events, earned revenue and memberships, which is a little bit different dynamic than many of the other sectors that we have, government and charitable giving, which is the individuals, foundations, and corporations. Typically, what we see is that a smaller organization is very dependent on charitable giving, and then as you move toward the right to the larger organizations, you're going to see more earned revenue and government funding. The arts sector does a really good job. It's very diverse. We don't see the drastic change as we move from smaller organizations to larger organizations. So it's very unique. So you may be very challenged in maintaining your fundraising and building your donors, but the work that you are doing as far as fundraising is very diverse. So you're ahead in your strategies as far as building earned revenue, government and charitable giving blends, having more diversity than some of the other sectors. So that's very good news for the arts sector. The other takeaway from this slide is it's very important for all of us to know, to be very familiar with what our financial position looks like within our own organization. So once you know that, does your organization fall within these trends? Do you have three areas that are primary revenue sources that are diverse, so you're not relying heavily on one? And just because you do fall within these trends, are there some areas for opportunity? These are the trends that we typically see, but maybe they're not the right ones for the specific time period that we're in. So be very innovative. Think outside the box. Think about the for-profit partnerships. Also, neighborhood associations are another good option. And then all the options that we talked about with collaboration, networking, sharing programs, and that kind of thing. This slide drills down just a little bit more, building on what we just talked about as far as revenue sources. And again, this is very unique and very positive for the arts sector, and that is the diversity that we see all across the board and where your funding sources are coming from. It's very consistent with what we looked at. If we have smaller employers that are less than full or two full-time employee equivalents, we have a huge mix of revenue here. And really the only change that we see as we move to the larger organizations with more employees, it's just a little bit more of the larger corporate donors and a little bit more government. But the mix is there from the very beginning. And so with that, I would like to go ahead and hand it over to Jeffrey.
Thanks, Lori. Well, this is the next session. This last session is really for you to participate, because what I'm going to go over the next few minutes are really responses we got back from you from the surveys that you responded to. And I'd like to give you a context of an overall picture of where I see arts, culture, and humanities in the Kansas City market. You know, we are blessed to have some very large foundations, and foundation giving here in Greater Kansas City is up above the national average. The national average for foundations, some 12%. The national, the local average of foundation giving is 18%. So we have some very large giving. In the good times, the foundations are very generous to arts, culture, and humanities. And in tough economic times, the arts locally and nationally mirror the same reflection of a tightening of corporate and foundation budgets and their impact on then your arts organization. If you think about it, here in Greater Kansas City, we've had nearly $1 billion given to the arts over the last decade. $1 billion over the last decade. If you look at the Nelson, that would be about between different sources of money. There was $400 million given to the Nelson. If you look at the Performing Arts Center, they're trying to raise nearly $400 million. If you look at the top-tier organizations of the Symphony, the ballet, the repertory theater, the opera. Those organizations collectively probably are raising over the last number of years and currently $50 to $100 million themselves. So if you really think about it, in our community, we have a very vibrant giving community for the arts. That's the good news. The tough news is reflected on the slides up here, where a majority of arts organizations that responded to the survey showed that giving was down in 2008. We had fewer donors. Those donors were decreasing their gifts, and we had a loss of large gifts to a number of organizations. Giving by categories, that is individuals, corporations, and foundations, was down almost across the board. You told us from your organizations, or giving was flat in 2008. You know, what's interesting is only a half of the organizations that responded to the survey have an endowment. And you reported that they were 40% down. Well, that's a little bit more than the Dow Jones was. The Dow was down 37% last year. So you sort of mirror the national average. However, if you think about it, 80% of the arts organizations in Greater Kansas City have a budget of $250,000 or less. So why would 80% of the organizations who have the budget of $250,000 or less really have an endowment or need or have a really a strong case for an endowment? What I would argue for in your organizations that have budgets of $250,000 or less are cash reserves. We've worked with two organizations over the last few years that have budgets in the neighborhood of $250,000 to $500,000, but they also had cash reserves of almost double what their operating budget was. And when we went to funders and individuals and spoke about that, that was a very powerful message about the stability of that organization and the niche role it played in the community as well. Last, but that a third of you reported that you did see an increase in government funding. And I'd be interested in what that increase in increase was. Would anyone like to share what the government funding increase was that you saw in your organization? Oh, come on.
I'm here. So, hi.
Yeah, Kate.
Well, unfortunately, Friends of Chamber Music wasn't a recipient of this, but I know the NEA had $50 million was part of the recovery plan by Obama, and so the NEA was giving out grants. I guess notified people in June, so I'm guessing that's where a lot of people saw that increase. It was very competitive, and I know there were some other organizations in Kansas City that didn't receive it either, but lots did. So I'm guessing that's maybe one part.
Okay.
Yes, but directly from the NEA. I think for us at the ballet, the biggest increase came actually from the overall increase of the budget for the Missouri Arts Council.
Mm-hmm.
I think that may be where a lot of people saw a big bump. I think we went from we saw at least double from 2007 to 2008.
Okay. All right. So what are you doing about your lack of or decrease in funding?
Jeffrey, we have another comment.
I'm sorry.
The Arts Council of Metropolitan Kansas City received $250,000 for the stimulus this year, of which $243,000 we granted back out.
Fantastic. Yeah. Great. So what are you doing about it? Well, what I hear is that you're not sacrificing the quality of your programming, But a number of you this morning mentioned to me that you did cut back on the number of programs that you were providing to your audiences. So whether that be Friends of Chamber Music or the Unicorn or the opera, that the number of opportunities to do programming, you did cut back. What we also heard from you was that really staffing positions were frozen in your arts organizations. I don't know a lot of directors of development that moved around over the last 9 to 12 months, because if you had a job, you wanted to hold on to your job, and if you didn't have a job, then it was a tough market out there. So we didn't see that. I think, and as it relates to your fundraising, 40% of you cut printing to move to online communication. Well, I think arts organizations are unique because you have an opportunity as an arts organization to know who your members and your subscribers are, and you have a real opportunity to use a technology to your advantage as well. And train, and hopefully you can train your audience members and your patrons to respond online to what you're doing. Also, 73% of you said that you made more special appeals to cover the shortfall, and I think that's a smart move as well. That you were targeted in your approach about appeals. You didn't do a shotgun approach. And last in fundraising, that 82% increased the number of grants applied for. And while that is very positive, that if you remember what Jennifer said, the median grant was $2,000. And I know, because I was on your side of the desk for 12 years, I know how hard those $2,000 average grants are to put together. And then, oh, by the way, I gave you $2,000. You need to report what you did and the outcome with that $2,000. So I have a lot of sympathy for the arts, for you in the room who are doing that as well. Yes, of course.
It makes me think that, thanks, I have a hunch, and my grant writer is here. Maybe she could chime in too. But I have a feeling that although we may have increased the number of grants we sent out, A, they may have been to newer funders that we didn't have a real strong relationship with, so the likelihood of getting that grant was probably not as good as with our, you know, nearest and dearest. And then secondly, I have a feeling that we also applied for smaller amounts. You know, we weren't going to go to a new funder for $50,000. We were going to maybe go for $2,500 to a smaller regional foundation or a local foundation that we just hadn't, you know, tapped into before. So I'm just saying, all this work, and I wonder how much ground we gained, even though we were all apparently applying to, for additional grants this past year.
I think that's a great comment. You know, and the thing, the challenge of applying for 82% increase the number of grants are, did you apply for the grant, and then did you meet with a potential funder face to face? Or were they just applied for and then left open? It's the face-to-face contact that you really have to have with that potential funder as well. Well, how are you opening doors? You're trying to focus on major gifts. How many of you are executive directors in the room here? A couple. So many of you were more focused on fundraising than normally. More face-to-face visits with donors, which is always good. You increased your PR and online awareness, and you did more smaller events. You know, events have a plus and a negative. A plus is that they increase your awareness, and they can sometimes drop to your bottom line if that's your purpose, but they also sap the energy of your volunteers and your organizations, as you well know. Well, what are the challenges and opportunities that we see? The challenges, you know, the demand you have on your cash flow, keep your operations moving in a positive direction, as Lori said, and about 75% of the organizations do have positive revenues over expenses, and then we have some challenges with about 25% of the organizations. Another challenge is lower average gift from the donors. Donors are still giving to their favorite causes, but they might be but you're giving at a lower average gift. The opportunities are you have loyal donors. Ingrid was telling me about New Ear, a small arts organization that has been around 17 years that is providing modern classical music performances. Did I get that right? And, you know, you've got to have, for sustaining yourselves for 17 years, you have to have loyal donors who are continuing to support your organizations. So as my friend Beth Smith would say, you need to go out and love up those donors, Ingrid, and stay close to them. Another opportunity you have is around events. And if you're going to be celebrating your 20th anniversary or your 15th anniversary or your 10th anniversary, people do like to package around anniversaries and be able to celebrate those. And last opportunity you have is obviously the cultivation of new donors. And the opportunity, I believe, as was mentioned, at least introducing your organization to new donors and starting to develop that relationship. Well, what do we do now? And what are you doing now, I guess, would be the question I would ask. Are you being strategic? Are you thinking about who are my top 50 donors? And what am I going to do strategically to touch those top 50 donors at least once a month? Whether that be a newsletter, it be a telephone call, it be an online update about what you're doing. What are you doing to be strategic to your top-level potential and current donors? Are you being transparent? Are you letting your donors know that you're struggling? You know, I was in Pennsylvania last week with a donor who made a $500,000 gift in November to an organization that I'm working with. Now, if you remember back in November of last year, it was pretty bleak times. And we really had very few organizations that were receiving six-figure gifts. And we were just trying to have organizations hold on to the donors that they had. Well, what that donor told me last week when we met with them was that 30% of wealth was lost over the last 18 months by most households. 30%. Over the last 6 months, we've gained 15% of that loss back. So while we're still struggling and a little bit timid about our economy, we are seeing some very positive improvements about that. I think your organization has to be transparent and has to let your best donors know what your situation is. I think a lot of nonprofits, and I've been involved in this, try to gloss over what the problems are. And I will promise you, you will develop a stronger relationship with your funders if you are more transparent. Obviously, you've got to be understanding. You've got to understand that the donor is struggled and that that you've got to allow them more time to make decisions. And that's the next point. Be patient with your donors and let them be flexible about how they want to pay off their pledges as well. Well, what do you want to do next? You obviously want to focus on your closest constituencies. You've got to be strategic. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but think, how many of you have a moves management program that you have developed in your own organization? And by moves management, I mean how many of you have a program where you have a targeted list of your top donors and that you make sure that you touch them in some way every month? Now, that's not touching them, asking for a gift, because as some of the experts would say, you need to thank your donor seven times, I believe it's seven times, before you go back and ask for another gift. So how are you bringing those donors around strategically in the various constituencies that you have? And how are you engaging them in meaningful ways? Anyone want to offer some comments about how they are approaching their donors in meaningful ways or creative ways? Okay, I'll have to call on someone. Yes, Megan.
Our marketing team is doing a fantastic job of putting together, we're Performing Arts Center, and so putting together pre-performance emails and post-performance emails that go to patrons as well as donors for each of our performances.
Anyone else want to share? What are you doing, Kate? I know you do a lot of, I know what Friends of Chamber Music does as they engage their donors in after party dinner parties. And they invite their best donors to meet the artist or a reception with the artist after the performance. And I've been to a few of those. So those are meaningful ways of engaging your patrons as well. Yes.
I just got an interesting mailing, which is the first time I'd ever seen them, this kind of a mailing. It was from the Johnson County Performing Arts Center. And in my other life, I taught dancing. And for the first time for their performance series, they are having, before the performance series, a day-long workshop for people interested. You don't even have to be a dance teacher to come in and meet the performers, engage with them, see what they do and what it's like to be part of the training session rather than the performance session. And I've been teaching dancing for a long, long time, and I've never seen that. And I thought that was a really interesting way of engaging perhaps new donors and new participants.
Deborah? We do a staff engagement with our board, and we call it Board Buddy. And so each staff member signs up for a board member and takes them to our school programs and involves them in at least two programs a year so that they stay educated and engaged.
What's your organization?
Kansas City Young Audiences.
Okay. Oh, great. Any other thoughts? Well, how are you using special events to increase your awareness? Are you using it to are you using special events more for awareness building? Are you using special events for fundraising purposes?
Jeffrey. I'm with the Kemper Museum, and mm-hmm. we recently celebrated our 15th anniversary, so I kind of perked up when you had the anniversary mentioned there. I think what we tried to do, or I know what we tried to do with that event, was really create not only the big splashy party, as I call it, but also something that was meaningful to all the interlocking circles of people involved. We brought in artists from around the country who are in the museum's permanent collection. We overlaid that group, so to speak, with some of our top donors and asked them to host private parties in their home with the artists. And then, of course, reached out to our volunteer base, our docents, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we just had layer upon layer upon layer of interaction, interconnection, and it was really it was a real success, and we're measuring it obviously by the bottom line proceeds of the events on the weekend of October 9th and 10th, but also I saw some crazy high numbers of new participants. I think it was something like 60 of our 200 plus, however many it was, 250 household ticket buyers were non-members. So, and oftentimes, and I want to say 50 of those 60 was first-time gift to the museum. So, I mean, it was kind of astonishing who came out and responded to this different kind of event, this opportunity to meet artists. I think I would like to dovetail with what you were saying about the Johnson County group having this workshop where you interact with artists. I think that's something that as a museum, at the Kemper Museum, we've done for a number of years, but I think the whole idea of involving, here we are, all arts organizations represented here, I think anything that allows people, the general public, to meet an artist of any sort, a dancer, a poet, a visual artist, helps demystify and humanize the entire arts production sector, if you will, or that part of our ecosystem. I mean, these aren't just kind of strange people that live off in the mountains and paint and then they show up in galleries. Some of them are, but not mentioning any names, but no. I mean, I think the whole idea of they aren't just people up on a stage or just people in a gallery, but in fact they have lives. They miss flights to your party. They do all kinds of things. And when you put them with a school group or with your docents or with your volunteers and you get that human face with it, it's really powerful. That's what we found a couple of weeks ago.
That's great. I do think I just reaffirm what you said, that the interconnection between the artist and your patrons are very important to build that donor loyalty and that donor awareness as well. Any other thoughts or examples on how you're using special events? Well, cause-related marketing is a term that has been around for the last number of years. I think our shining example nationally of cause-related marketing is Susan B. Komen. And Breast Cancer Awareness Month is right now, October. And the way that the Komen Foundation has been able to work with other foundations in leveraging their resources or corporations. Are any of you in the room doing any type of cause-related marketing opportunities with local or local patrons as well? What are you doing with technology in the room to promote your organization? Jennifer, do you want to mention an example of what Starlight Theater is doing with technology?
Yeah, I wish Starlight were in the room. We have a blog, and I blogged on this about a month or so ago. A friend of mine, Joyce Herenia, who is in charge of marketing for Helzberg Diamonds, is also on the board of Starlight. And I was coming back and just talking with her about technology and nonprofits, and she said, well, she had just gone down to Dell Boot Camp, Technology Boot Camp, down in Texas, and had come back and was really jazzed up about this. So she asked Starlight what they were doing, and I went on their website and saw that they were Twittering concerts. For those of us who remember the days when David Letterman had the interns that went behind the scenes and sort of had the live cam, they've got two interns that were provided through a local philanthropic gift who carry around cameras, and they blog and tweet and live cast through their website, and that's connected with Twitter, and that's connected with Facebook, and it's not just the Starlight promotions, but it is, I thought this was kind of cool, information on parking prior to the events, information on what the weather's going to be like, any special road closures or information that patrons need to get there. And I guess when I had the pleasure of working with Komen on a project nationally a few years ago, and they have some $350 million in cause marketing dollars, the arts community is positioned more than any other, except maybe education, here in Kansas City, to take advantage of that, because you have the one thing that people, other nonprofits, don't, and that is paid patronage. So when KCPNL is taking out an ad in the Missouri Repertory Bulletin, that's really cause marketing. It's philanthropic support as well. So I really want to challenge you all to tie those together, your audiences and how to build your audiences through technology, and bully to Starlight for doing a good job.
Other examples of how you're using technology to benefit your organization? Elite, yes. Megan.
We're really lucky because we're with the University of Kansas, so we've got these college students who understand and know and are excited about a lot of these technological opportunities. And so, you know, for us, obviously, we've got a built-in supply of students to come in. And if you don't have that, I would definitely encourage you to look towards student interns of that age group, because they've brought to us a lot of really great technological ideas and things that they're into and doing letting them also do interviews with artists beforehand as a webcast and things like that. So our patrons are seeing not just the artist, but they're seeing the students that the artists are coming in to do master classes with and whatnot, benefiting and also kind of taking that initiative to have that personal interaction. And a lot of our donors and patrons have really gotten excited about being able to watch these students have those opportunities as well. And that's been really cool.
Thank you. Are any of you initiating any type of specific grant requests for your immediate needs and asking your patrons or your funders for assistance in those immediate needs? Yes, Deborah?
Kansas City Young Audiences has its most recent program is the Community School of the Arts, and it opened in 2004. We are looking for and we are asking our major donors to support this in a bridge fund to bridge us for a couple of years. And then we are going to do a full-blown campaign for our 50th anniversary, which is coming up in 2011. So we're asking for bridge funding. And people, someone alluded to earlier, it's also sometimes better to ask for reserve funding versus endowment funding. And we're finding that people want to keep their cash in their own pocket, but they're willing to make commitments, but not too many long-term commitments nowadays. Have you noticed? I mean, they're just far and few between. So that's what we're doing.
And I would just follow up with that. I call it sustainability funds. And we have packaged a number of projects around sustainability, help our organization sustain itself over a number of years. So I think that's a good idea. Well, we're almost to 9:30. We promised you that we would have you out of here after a 90-minute discussion, but I'd just like to open it up to anyone in the room to have any question about any topic and see what some of your colleagues, how you would respond. Oh, come on, Yvonne. You have to have some question from the unicorn. You know me. I'll pick on my friends in the room. Sarah, you're next, so.
Oh, yeah, we have a question. Yvonne, are you ready?
I think probably one of the biggest challenges is not making your top donors feel as if you're turning around to them every other day. And tapping them for every penny they have, looking to not the top 50 next necessarily, but looking to the next tier down, mm-hmm. and cultivating them. And I think that's probably our biggest challenge right now.
Excellent. Good idea. Deborah.
Question. On page 7, the chart that's on page 7, the one that's total revenue, total expense ratios, I didn't catch exactly what those pies represented.
Is it the chart on the top or the bottom?
Bottom. Yeah.
That is the operating, the total revenue to total expense ratio. So it answers the question, how many of the organizations are at least breaking even or able to meet expenses based on current revenue? And this pie chart shows that 75% are breaking even. And then we have another 25% that are either borderline or struggling even a little bit more.
The arts
is doing a little bit better than some of the other sectors, but the question is, you know, is this really where we want to be? And of course, the answer is no, it's not.
Jennifer has a question she wants to ask.
Well, we were talking about pressures on giving, and it makes me wonder, since many of you rely on patronage, subscriptions, and individual ticket sales for earned income, what's happened there? And what pressure has that put on your fundraising and development, and how are you communicating that with donors? That's something that we didn't really have an opportunity. opportunity to focus on within the survey. Anybody?
Yeah, we sell subscriptions and single tickets, and it has gone down a little bit, but we've also decreased our number of concerts for this season to help with just organizational expenses. So I think we haven't really made it expressly clear to donors, but they can see that we're cutting back a little bit just to help control our costs. We did have to cancel an educational program last spring, and once people found out about that, I think that was a red flag to say, okay, Friends of Chamber Music might need a little more help right now. So, but yes, the earned revenue sadly continues to keep getting less and less of the pie. So,
okay. Well, we want to thank you. We want to thank the Community Foundation and Lori for their work. Especially, we want to thank Trudy and Michelle Davis, who I don't see here, for hosting these sessions. And on behalf of Jeffrey Byrne and Associates, we want to thank you for being here. Go to any of the websites for more information or contact any of us.